This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
Is another apocalyptic prediction about to come true? Winds of death sweep across the world, and whole continents will be cast adrift in an ocean of blood.
Hi, I'm Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, action, exploitation, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1970s to today. Be sure and check out reallyawfulmovies.com for reviews, interviews, lists, and terrific movie giveaways.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 67, Big Dollhouse.
Yes, Roger Corman's Big Dollhouse. This is a Roger Corman production, directed by the incredible Jack Hill.
Who is also responsible for Coffee and
Foxy
bringing,
Brown, yeah. Spider Baby, Swing Cheerleaders, Big Bird Cake, Switchblade Sisters. I mean, this guy is an exploitation maestro.
Yeah, and thankfully he brought Pam Grier into the public consciousness, and this we should say is our first WIP women in prison film.
Yeah,
this, as we say in our tagline, this is one of the genres that we cover, mm-hmm. and this is a genre we love.
Yeah, well, this is a great exemplar. On the site, mm-hmm. but we haven't actually talked about one, so this is our first, and it's actually interesting because this would be our first because this started the famous Corman Filipino set WIP cycle. I mean, there was Big Dollhouse, followed up by Women in Cages, followed up by The Big Birdcage. All three of them featuring Pam Grier. Now, this was Pam Grier's film debut. She plays a character by the name of Grier, so that's easy
Yeah, that
remember.
Makes it easy. Yeah. And she also warbles the title track, which is like a kind of a like a flute-filled 12-bar blues number. Mm-hmm. A little bit off-putting. It's maybe not the greatest, but...
I liked it.
It was okay, yeah. And, you know, again... Yeah, the Philippines is a place where many of our favorite, you know, exploitation films are lensed. Mm-hmm. We've got, you know, we've reviewed them on our site, TNT Jackson.
Well, we have a whole category of just lensed films.
Yeah. Firecracker, mm-hmm. just tons of these things. And I guess
there's a film called Sloan that I reviewed, mm-hmm. the film called Raw Force.
Raw Force, yeah.
This movie was one of the first that Corman made for his new production company, the name of which escapes me at the moment, but hey. Google it. Anyway. And he was looking for another hook, another angle, right? Something to, you know, make some money. And Women in Prison was a genre that was doing really, really well. So he...
Yeah, it goes back at least probably like 30 to 40 years before this. There's always been some, you know, variant on this. Obviously not nearly as exploitative, starring maybe Ida Lupino or one of these icons from the 60s, but with not nearly the amount of boobage, as you would see here, but it has a long track record, and why shouldn't it? You have a cast that's guaranteed to be predominantly female, young, attractive, enclosed.
Yep.
Why not?
And we'll get to some
unclothed.
We'll get to some of the tropes of the WIP mm-hmm. genre in a while, but I mean this movie sort of set the template. Now, originally, he was thinking of having it lensed in Los Angeles. But he was told that, you know, he would get a lot more bang for his buck, a lot more production value for the same amount of money if he was to take it overseas, right? They thought about Puerto Rico, but eventually it was the Philippines. And like I said before, I mean, this is the start of that cycle of Filipino lens women in prison movies. And this is, I mean, Corman made a few, but I mean, Corman was, many filmmakers sort of took that ball and went to the Philippines and made exploitation movies. And I mean, why the Philippines? Many reasons. The locals were cheap.
Yeah.
They didn't have to deal with the unions, right? They didn't have to deal with, they have the production crew working in very hazardous conditions. Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, it's also a very exotic setting. So, what we have here is we have a prison in the Philippines run by a very wicked warden by the name of Dietrich. And,
I guess there was a little dig at a Swiss producer with whom Roger Corman worked, who was a real dick, who was mm-hmm. a bit of a shyster. So subsequently, this guy's name was dragged through the mud and on celluloid.
Yeah,
and yeah, we got this prison, and
so was it some Marlene Dietrich that he was
doing? No, it was a Teutonic Dietrich, and she runs the prison with an iron fist, and her
second in command
is a sort of Angelina Jolie type figure.
Really?
Yeah,
I didn't see that at all.
Yeah. Sort of skinny with a long face.
She almost reminded me a bit more of Mary Warnoff in a sense.
Oh yeah, the same thing. Yeah. Long face, attenuated, slender features. You know, good call. Yeah,
yeah. She's also a little Teutonic. She kind of had that, you know, the Z and the Zis and all that. You know. But,
yeah. And we're introduced to the sort of more shameful, I guess. Examinations, you get frisk in prison. Mm-hmm. Your orifices are checked for contraband, like this. Where you have a woman like with legs splayed out on a table, getting felt up by a butchy Filipino sort of guard.
It's funny because right now, I guess I'm going on another little tangent, but women in prison, it's sort of in vogue thanks to Orange is the New Black.
Right? Yes, it is, yeah.
Which is, I guess, purports to be a very sort of realistic depiction of what it's like.
Yeah, and who needs that?
When you have this, you know what I mean?
Who wants realism? It's like porn.
Exactly.
These are all preternaturally stunning women who, all these cons in this prison are gorgeous. Mm-hmm.
So you're mentioning the frisk.
Intake is a little bit, even rougher than what you'd expect the worst thing to be in prison would be.
And I guess this would be our hero. Her name is Collier. Mm-hmm. She's
very attractive ginger.
Very attractive ginger, exactly. Mm-hmm. Although, is ginger a pejorative term?
No, I don't care. Go ahead.
Her hair is red. Anyway. Mm-hmm. And then she's placed in a cell with Alcott, who's a blonde. Bodine, who's a very attractive
Bodine is, yeah,
brunette.
She's the tall, tough-as-nails leader of this cell block.
And she also has a boyfriend who's a revolutionary somewhere out there. And I guess I was arrested because of revolutionary activities, whatever. And
seditious and, revolutionary activities. And he's holed up in the mountains somewhere. Yep. But yeah.
We got this junkie by the name of Herod. And then, of course, there's Greer. Played by Pam Greer.
Is Greer as Pam Greer. Yeah, that's her surname. And I guess we should point out that this is apparently naming convention for this for the joint here. Is that everyone goes by their surname, and that's it. You don't deviate from that.
Yeah. So, Greer is kind of interesting. Like, in this movie, is she a heroine? Is she a villain? She's sort of a bit of both, right? But then there's another inmate, and she's the only Filipino inmate and her name is Farina. And what I find very interesting about the Corman WIP movies is that the Filipino inmates, I liken them to there's that cliche, that trope in Star Trek. I'm not a Trekkie by any means. Everyone's heard of
the red shirts.
The red shirts.
Yeah.
You know, they're just there as fodder.
True.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they don't really have any lines, they don't really do anything, and they just get, dispatched, right? So, in the Corman cycle of WIP movies, you have the redshirt Filipino inmates who are either guards, inmates that don't really have much to do in terms of screen time or lines or what have you, in this one...
But I guess you can sort of explain it away, because prisons are racially segregated anyway, so the fact that they're focusing on these... Americans who they, for some reason, decided to house together. It doesn't seem particularly, in terms of prison safety.
Right.
Although there's lots of violations of,
And
a lot of oversights when it comes to, penal security here. Mm-hmm. One of the great quotes in this movie is when one of the inmates meets their demise. The line is, another perfectly good piece of ass gone to waste.
Up in smoke.
Yeah.
Because what they ended up doing was cremating.
They cremate them, which is, again, ridiculous, too, because, even on these shores, someone on death row, they would be able to have their families be present at their demise.
A proper burial.
And this is just, someone dies, up in smoke.
Yeah, and this quote, was spoken by a lascivious fruit vendor by the name of Harry, played by the wonderful Sid Haig. I love Sid Haig, and I mean,
Devil's Rejects, House of Thousand Corpses. I recently saw him playing the head of a hybrid crocodile human family living in the Bayou Swamps in a movie called Creature. Mm-hmm. He's I didn't realize he was sort of a handsome guy back in the 70s.
He was kind of a suave
fruit vendor whose job it was, along with this guy Freddy, to bring inmates really a bounty of
this is a cornucopia
it
fruit.
Was incredible yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It reminded me of a little bit of the Simpsons and Principal Skinner, when he's thinking back to his internment in Vietnam. And he's talking about how he had to subsist on a diet of soup with shrimp and a coconut milk broth. And he hasn't been able to replicate it since coming back to the States. But I thought that was hilarious. So these prisoners have it pretty good.
But game back,
they're all gorgeous. They have incredible food. Mm-hmm. And they're not worked too hard either.
Well, getting back to it, they are out there in the plantation.
In the blazing sun.
Which is kind of hilarious getting back to Sid Haig, but not only are Harry and Freddy bringing in this fruit to sell to these inmates, but they're also bringing, I guess what you would say, contraband. They're bringing cigarettes and letters, correspondence from the outside in order to give the court. For example, at one point he goes to Greer and says, "I got some correspondence from the outside. But in order to get it, you have to do something for me." And he's basically a hoardy motherfucker.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And he feels her up from, through the bars.
Through the bars, yeah.
And as it turns out, it's not even a letter intended for Greer. It's a letter for Bodine.
Whoops.
But, I mean, getting back to this whole fruit, this is ludicrous. Because, I mean, again, could they not, grow fruit within the confines of this prison?
They have
to
bring it in from outside.
They're working. They can grow pineapples. They can grow mangoes. But no, they got to get this ridiculous, sombrero wearing vest, no shirt, mustachio.
And speaking of ludicrous, every one of these inmates in this cell, in this very small cell, has a backstory.
Mm-hmm.
So again, we've got Collier, who's the star, and she apparently, I guess, offed her. And this is just great. Her eye patch wearing, philandering husband, after he made it with their servant boy. So when she found out, she decided to put an end to this guy's life. Mm-hmm. And then there's also a woman who's committed infanticide, who's one of the bunkmates there. And just again,
that was Hera, the junkie, I believe, right?
Yes,
who committed infanticide. Yeah.
And Pam Greer, what did she do?
Something about she was like a hooker.
She was a hooker. Like, but why? How did she get 30 years?
I think she killed her pimp or something. But anyway, so I guess let's talk about the plot a bit. So I mean, if that's even necessary. But so we talked about this piece of contraband, this letter from the outside, right? That Bodine reads, and this is from her revolutionary boyfriend. Well, it's discovered by the nefarious second-in-hand guard Lucien. And poor Bodine, I mean, she gets
gets strung up
in a bamboo prison in the hot sun.
Yeah.
And left
naked
to rot
in a bamboo jail, suspended from the rafters.
Right, and then, if that's left not to burn enough, in the she's hot, then yeah. taken into this dungeon where she's tortured by Lucien while this hooded man watches. He reminded me of Cobra Commander from G.I. Joe.
You mentioned the torture. This is integral to the women in prison genre. You have to have certain key elements have to be there for every single film.
You have to have a wicked warden.
Ideally a really butch sort of lesbian warden.
Although you gotta have good whippings.
She was very attractive.
Well, she was attractive, but you gotta have whippings. Mm-hmm. Yep. You have to have the obligatory nude shower scene. You have to have the obligatory wrestling in mud. This movie has it. And you have to have the obligatory hosing down the inmates scene. This movie has it all. So our heroines, they're sort of hashing this plot to escape, right? And
It's kind of like that Steve McQueen movie.
The Great Escape?
Oh, okay, the great, yeah, of course, the greatest, this escape isn't so great.
No, this is the less than great escape, but anyway. Yeah, I mean, they're coming up with some, like, you know, convoluted, you know...
plan to get themselves out of there. And also, at the same time, what's going on is this internecine power struggle. Because what you've got here is the now compromised, physically, Bodine, who was the tallest member of the group, who's now basically burned to a crisp and out in the sun.
Yep.
And the upstart, Greer, who wants, you know, a cut of the action. She wants to take the lead. And... you know, one of the other inmates, who they're all vying for top dog, top bitch, I guess, in this prison. And so this brings us to a Pistols at Dawn moment, where they agree to fight it out for supremacy.
Yep.
And fight it out for leadership.
And they're also sort of fighting out for the ownership of Collier, too.
Yes.
So that was
because, as we found out, Pam Greer has an affinity for redheads, for Ginger. So,
well, exactly.
You know, so... she has a succession of Ginger. She's got Herod the junkie and now Collier, the new blood, who's very attractive. So this leads to an incredible mud wrestling scene.
Well, we mentioned that. De rigueur, is that the French term? Yep, for this sort of movie. Part for the
well
course.
Done, yeah.
Yeah, thank you. I dropped out of French grade 9, but you know, I
c'est bon. Yeah, and Pam Greer is bested and she has her face just sort of smashed right into the mud, and she has her arm pried behind her back, and she cries uncle, I guess, and has to cede second in command in the unit to
But the thing you were saying before about her affinity for redheaded ladies,
yeah.
I mean,
and I don't care if that's derogatory.
I mean, she's sort of like the dead mother of this this junkie Herod, and she has to procure the
heroin powder.
Which is one of my favorite lines in the movie, where she snoops around the office of Lucien.
Yeah.
And one thing I found funny about Lucien is this was weird sort of like predilection she had. I don't know why. Her hair was always up in this tight bun. Every time
again, Angelina Jolie.
She did not cross
with
Angelina Jolie.
Yes, she did. Crossed with Mary Warnoff. She did.
She
I don't know how you didn't see it.
No. Anyway, we're both. Yeah, we'll agree to disagree, but so she goes in and she goes, and then she's discovered by Lucien, who goes, "I have no heroin powder for you today." And they just keep repeating heroin powder.
Heroin powder.
You get no heroin powder. You tell me about the escape. I release you from this nightmare. I give you the heroin powder. So in order to get this heroin powder, as she says, Greer spills the beans a bit, and... informs Lucien that there is an escape attempt afoot that's being planned. And the other thing that happens to Greer, ironically, is she wants to get this heroin powder for Herod, but Herod does not want Greer to escape because she figures that if Greer escapes...
she's finally developed some autonomy. Maybe doesn't sick of being under her wing.
Well, she's a junkie, though, and she figures if Greer escapes, how am I going to get my heroin powder? Right?
I guess.
So she took her little makeshift syringe and slashed Greer... in the jugular.
Yeah, so no kills her. Or she was just sick of being her bitch, although who would be sick of being, like, you know, Pam Greer's bitch, let's be honest.
So anyway.
Poor Pam Greer gets a syringe in the neck and she's done.
Right. So bye-bye Greer, and now we're left with, you know, Bodine, Collier, and Alcott, and they have this plan to escape, and basically they have to... extricate themselves in these two idiots,
the two idiot fruit vendors, who are men, obviously, and then they, and despite a claim earlier that all men are filthy, that goes by the wayside because these guys actually help them escape. And,
well, they don't do it willingly. I mean, they sort of, they do it at gunpoint, but there's actually this line that it's spoken by Greer earlier where she goes, "You're rotten, Harry. You know why? Because you're a man."
All men are filthy, so it stands to reason. Anyway, they managed to get themselves out of this prison with incredibly lax security. Guns blazing. And they also managed to have they get the warden. They hold the warden hostage and take her and abscond with her.
Now, as I was saying before about the whole red shirt thing, of course, as they are escaping, somebody does get mowed down in a hail of bullets. Who is it? Farina,
the Filipino inmate. and at this point, I guess, so they've busted out, they're close to having their freedom, but they still want to exact revenge on the warden. So they let Harry loose on the warden and say, hey, have your way with her. Mm-hmm. And at this point, the tidy-whitey clad Harry and Freddy have reservations about, you know, I can't put it in any more palatable terms here, but sexually assaulting the warden. And he tries to, you know, he demurs, he tries to get away from it, and then, but he finally sort of relents and realizes that at gunpoint he basically has to do this with the warden.
Now the other thing too is that unfortunately Bodine, I mean, she, as unbeknownst to the other girls, she gets hit and she's fading fast, right? So
yeah.
He's so the escape does not go down as easily as they want, and Bodine is hit and she's, you know, she's a goner. She basically gives a letter to Collier and says,
yes.
You know, delivers to my boyfriend. There's the guards come back, and then, you know, there's sort of like a Mexican standoff, and, you know, at the end of the day, the only one that's left standing is Collier.
Mm-hmm.
And we figure, okay, she's going to make her escape. Well, in an earlier podcast, we talked about a movie, Nightmare City, that had a
yes.
very sort of weird, sort of palindromic ending where it sort of goes right back to the beginning.
Yeah, sort of unsatisfying. And
this one sort of is similar.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say more than that.
No.
But it wasn't exactly a happy ending. Although it did end with the same theme song sung by Perrin Greer, which I thought was a great song. So.
Yeah. What did we learn?
Well, I mean, I learned that, first of all, I do not ever... You know, there's that great song by the... I mean, one of my absolute favorite bands is the Ramones, right?
Yes.
And they have that song, Pet Sematary. I don't want to be buried in a pet cemetery,
yeah,
right?
With cemetery spelt incorrectly for
exactly.
reasons unexplained.
Very true. Not only do I not want to be buried in a pet cemetery, I do not want to ever be incarcerated in a Filipino prison. Whether it's a women's prison, a male prison...
At the very least, if you were incarcerated in a Filipino prison, you would be towering over everyone else. I don't know whether that would make you the target, the de facto target, but at least you would be the biggest guy there.
I'm not a big guy, dude.
Yeah, you're like 5'11", something
okay.
like that. Yeah,
yeah,
you would be the biggest guy in a Filipino prison. So there
okay.
you go. As opposed to, let's say, San Quentin, where you would be the smallest
oh
guy
God,
and
I
white
would,
guy, and you would be over for
it. It would last about three
yeah.
hours. If
and
San
if we've
Quentin.
Learned anything from the St. Anger Metallica video about San Quentin. Okay, well, we didn't need that video to know how shitty San Quentin would be. But anyway, like, I'm 5'9",
well,
you're 5'11", we're white guys, we would not last long.
Well, at least if I was in San Quentin, I might get a really cool concert by a country and western music singer.
True
know.
Enough, true
enough.
Yeah, well, the climate isn't so bad.
No, so, you know, there's
yeah.
just, always look at the bright side of life, dude, as Monty Python would say.
True enough.
What did you learn?
I learned that when Pam Grier says... No, that was just awful. I learned that when Pam Grier says, I like being on top, you cede the top bunk to her. Or just, hell, let her be on top. Because she looks fucking amazing. Like, she's just, she's got that star quality.
Mm.
And the other women are beautiful in their own right, but there's just, holy crap.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's unbelievable.
And the other thing about Pam Grier,
she still looks incredible.
Say,
she's
like,
what, late 60s?
Because mm-hmm. on my Blu-ray of this movie, which actually has Big Bird Cage, Women in Cages, there's a documentary called From Manila with Love, where they actually interview a lot of the principals in these movies. Not very many of them have aged well. Some of them, unfortunately, are no longer with us. Pam Grier, she's still got it, man. She looks
yeah.
good. And as evidenced in Jackie Brown.
Jackie Brown, which I
yeah.
thought, like, I'm not the biggest Tarantino fan, but I thought that was very underrated.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a terrific movie. A little bit overlong, but it was great, and she was great.
Yeah, Robert Forster.
Robert Forster,
well.
Yeah, Piranha.
Yep, yep, for sure. So,
Alligator.
Yep.
I'm getting my creature features mixed up.
But, okay, so for a star rating then?
Oh, this is a interesting introduction for people to the women in prison genre. It's pretty exploitative.
Mm-hmm.
Not as much as, let's say, Bruno Mattei's Women women's prison massacre, right? It's pretty exploitative.
Yeah, or let's say Chained Heat or Cage Heat. Or
yeah, anything even, with cages even, and women.
Even the Big Bird Cage was a lot more sleazy than this one, although this one does...
This is pretty sleazy.
It's not without fair sleaze. So.
I felt like I needed a shower, maybe needed to be rubbed down in their shower with a little piece of soap.
Shower.
Yes. Like a 3.5 for me.
3.5? Yeah. I'm going to give it a 3, and I'm going to say, I mean, like I said, like it sort of set the template, and... but I mean, it is a good sort of introduction to the genre, and I mean, we both love Corman, so
yes,
we'll give it that. Sid Haig is always a delight. Mm-hmm. He was fantastic in this one, and you know, just for bringing the world Pam Grier. I mean, it's good.
Definitely. We all have him. You know, we owe him our debt.
Yep. So 3 stars from us. 3 from me. 3.5 from you. So for more,
www.reallyawfulmovies.com, part of the Crypt TV family,
and we will talk to you soon.
Take care. Thank you.